Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, Kyiv is braced for an attack from Russian forces this morning following the decision by the US embassy there to temporarily close its embassy, instructing its diplomats to shelter in place. And it all follows on from the first deployment of long-range missiles supplied by the United States to Ukraine as tensions rise between the West and Vladimir Putin. Well, Scott Lucas is Professor of International Politics at UCD's Clinton Institute, and he's on the line now. Good morning to you, Scott.
Good morning, Claire.
What's your own interpretation of the decision by the United States to close its embassy temporarily? I mean, they say it's done out of an abundance of caution. What does it tell you?
It is precautionary because of the prospect, or as the embassy phrases it, quote, a potential significant air attack by the Russians. And of course, that would be nothing new. The Russians, you know, throughout this 33-month invasion, have carried out missile and drone strikes, sometimes on a daily basis, on Ukraine cities, including the capital. There was a major attack over the weekend with 120 missiles and 90 drones across Ukraine. So the likelihood they hit the capital again soon is high. The question here is whether the Americans have information that the embassy itself would be targeted, because, of course, you know, firing on an embassy is a violation of international law and every diplomatic standard in the playbook.
I mean, Russia has warned, hasn't it, for months. If Washington allows Ukraine to fire these missiles deep into Russia, Moscow would consider those NATO members to be directly involved in the war in Ukraine. Are we at that point, or is it just rhetoric? Because we have seen this from Vladimir Putin before.
Yeah, look, if I had a euro for every time that Vladimir Putin has thumped his chest and said, you know, we've got these weapons here, even we've got these nuclear weapons, we can hit you, we can hit you, I'd be a very, very wealthy person. The Russians have used that to keep the Americans at bay for much of the invasion. That's one of the reasons why the Americans did not allow, until this past week, permission for these strikes inside Russia. I think the threat here is not nuclear weapons. Need to put that across. What we're watching for is, to be honest with you, the Russians pound Ukraine with these missiles and drones, and the possibility of this hybrid warfare they've carried out for years. And by that, I mean cyber attacks. By that, I mean attempts to cause economic disruption. A lot of disinformation, massive amount of disinformation. That's what we'd be expecting in the days to come.
And we were expecting, weren't we, after the United States says, yes, you can go ahead and use these missiles to Ukraine, that France and the UK would row in behind that. But we haven't had confirmation that they have made that decision.
We don't have confirmation, but the European Union's foreign policy head, Josep Borrell, hinted yesterday that that is already occurring. He said some countries, in other words, some other countries, have already given permission for those weapons to be used. Some other countries would have to be the British and the French. I suspect we're not going to get confirmation of that because you keep the Russians guessing a bit in terms of how many missiles they're facing and where they might be aimed.
Now, as we look towards Donald Trump taking over in the White House in January, it has been said, as we've been talking about this over the course of the program, looking ahead to what it means to the war in Ukraine, that Kursk really is the vital part of the jigsaw here, that Russia will want to retake that region ahead of any possible negotiations. Do you agree?
I agree. That's a very good starting point assessment. Ukraine took about 1,300 square kilometers of territory from August when they launched this surprise cross-border assault. They still have about 1,000 square kilometers, and the Russians are finding it very hard to get that back. It's a bargaining chip, let's be honest here, which is you trade Kursk for some of the territory that the Russians occupy, especially in eastern Ukraine, and Vladimir Putin doesn't want to make that trade. He wants to try to hold on as much of Ukraine as possible. So, yes, I think the combination of Kursk being important and the game changer with the U.S. allowing these missile strikes inside Russia makes it a bit more difficult for the Kremlin to come to the negotiating table with it to present an ultimatum, as it were, to Kyiv.
Scott, thank you very much. Scott Lucas, Professor of International Politics at UCD's Clinton Institute. Now, as we say, all of this comes as the transition team for Donald Trump's presidency looks at how they're going to deal with the war in Ukraine. But overnight, he has been appointing more people to key positions. One of them is a man called Howard Lutnick. He's the co-chair of the transition team. He's the current CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald, and he's now going to lead the Commerce Department. Well, let's take a listen to what he had to say about Ireland and policies towards foreign direct investment and corporation tax. This is Howard Lutnick speaking on Bloomberg TV recently.
Let's go over what Apple does right now. This is a simple example. They make the parts in China.
Yeah.
They put the parts together in Taiwan. Then they wave their magic wand and it floats over Ireland. Of course it floats over Ireland because that's where Apple does its products. And then it comes to America and they make, I don't know, something like 3% profit in America. They pay corporate tax on 3% profit in America. And Ireland announces a massive budget surplus for their 5 million people. Ha, ha.
So this,
it's just not true. So the concept is have them pay their taxes in America, and that is how you fix America. You make it fair, you make it right. Why is Ireland announcing a surplus? Oh,
so,
give me a break.
So
it's all our business.
All right. Well, I think we got a sense of where he stands around Ireland from that. Let's find out more about Howard Lutnick now and what it's going to mean for us here, his appointment to the Commerce Department. John Isle is Deputy Business Editor with the Sunday Times. John, thanks for joining us this morning. So this man has been named to lead the US Commerce Department. What do you know about him?
Well, what's interesting about this nomination from the Trump team is that Howard Lutnick, in contrast to many of the nominees we've heard about in recent weeks, is really a man of substantial achievement. He's a Wall Street legend. He's a billionaire by his own making and really has a reputation that outshines many of the other nominees. As chief executive of Cantor Fitzgerald, he grew that firm from utter devastation after September 11th, when 70% of the staff were killed in the attacks on the World Trade Center, and has rebuilt it into really a monumental firm with outposts all over the world, including in Ireland, where they have a significant business. He's a major philanthropist in the New York area. He's donated hundreds of millions to September 11th relief funds, as well as other charitable causes around Hurricane Sandy. He's a big proponent of education, and gives a lot of money to schools in New York, as well as his alma mater, which is Haverford College in Pennsylvania. So he's a person that I would say comes out of a more traditional Republican background, less of an ideological person than someone with a real portfolio of achievement who has a view of the world that he wants to implement. And Trump obviously likes what he has to say.
How long has he been involved with Donald Trump and the campaign?
Well, his efforts at fundraising for Donald Trump date back to the previous presidential election that Donald Trump lost in 2020. So Lutnick was a significant fundraiser in New York, hosting fundraisers at his own home. I believe he raised something like $5 million for that election, but he became more substantially involved in this election, 2024, where he hosted fundraisers again at his home in Manhattan and also in Bridgehampton, Long Island, where he has a home, and also kind of was instrumental in fundraising activities for these political action committees. And it's estimated by the New York Times today that he raised a total of $75 million for the campaign. So really quite a significant figure in terms of fundraising.
And given that he has a leg of his business here in Ireland, he knows about us. I mean, he's not bluffing this.
Yes, he's not bluffing, but I think there's something to point out here. So he's talking about trade deficits and what he considers in agreement with Trump is a sort of unfair trade arrangement with countries like Ireland, where we get to book some of the profits here and collect the tax on businesses that they believe is substantially developed in the United States. However, he clearly has a very positive opinion of the Irish economy because he's invested quite a lot in Cantor Fitzgerald, Ireland, which was an opportunistic purchase. They bought Dolman Stockbrokers during the financial crash for a small amount of money, but they've really developed that business in recent years. They've invested a lot, and they are now going to be trading European equities from an institutional trading desk. They're getting very interested in trading European bonds and so forth. So Cantor Fitzgerald's view, this may not be Harold Lutnick's particular personal view, Cantor Fitzgerald's view of Ireland is very positive as a place to do business. So I think there's a bit more texture to his views on the country, and it goes beyond the trade issues.
John, thank you very much. We'll look forward, let's say, in inverted commas, to what Howard Lutnick might do in his new job. He's been appointed as the man who will be in charge of commerce for Donald Trump. That's John Isle. Coming up next, the latest from the campaign trail. Plus, we'll hear from the home counties in the UK, where family, friends and fans of Liam Payne are gathering to lay the One Direction singer to rest. That's all on the way.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.